My name is Marlon. Welcome to my podcast. You can find a blog post that accompanies this message on PastorMarlon.com. That's PRMARLON.com. I am the pastor of the Park Avenue Seventh-day Adventist Church, located on 2285 East Park Avenue, Valdosta, Georgia. You can also find us online at parkavchurch.net. That's PARKAVECHURCH.NET. This podcast was recorded live at our church on February 24th, 2018. This is part three of our series, Love Is. When I first started this, I didn't expect I was going to be doing so many sermons on the book of Ruth, but I just have been impressed and amazed and blessed by the things I have been discovering as I have studied this book a little bit deeper, and I hope that you will be blessed as well as you enjoy part three. I'd love to hear back from you if you would like to leave some comments either on social media or on the page of the blog post or even on the podcast if you want to leave me a review on iTunes. I'd appreciate that, but let's get to the message and may God bless you. But Ruth has been interesting for me. It has been an exciting journey because I don't think I had ever preached on Ruth before. Because like some of you, I'd read through the book of Ruth and I'd wonder, like, I don't get it. You know, I get the love story and it's nice. But really, does this book belong in the Bible with all these other, you know, incredible stories? But now as we have gone through this and one sermon has become now three, I realized, yes, there's so much to this story that I had not noticed before because I've just gone through it too fast and I haven't been looking to what is God trying to teach me. I had never noticed, like we discussed last week, Boaz and just the way that he reflects Jesus. I mean, this is the clearest sign or definition of love in the life that we see before Jesus coming. This is it. This minor character that usually doesn't make anybody's top 10 list of favorite Bible characters, right? Boaz is not one of them. But yet, here's this amazing guy. And here's Ruth doing all these incredible things. And the story so far, it's been interesting. But also, the writer here, the person who's telling the story, has kept us sort of wondering on the hook, what's going to happen to Ruth? Because we ended the story with Ruth having enough grain. She was there for the barley harvest. She was there for the wheat harvest. And she's hanging out with her mother-in-law. And that's sort of where we left the story. But Boaz has not made a move. And you know what I mean by making a move, right? He has not approached Ruth in any way and talk about the flowers and wonder if she wants to come over for some tea. Like, none of that. It's like, come on, Boaz. It reminds me of a friend I had in college who one day came to me and said, you know, I don't know if I'll ever have a girlfriend. And I started talking with him and, you know, he's a nice guy, you know, very friendly, very, very nice to have a conversation with. And I was trying to figure out, you know, what's the issue? And I finally asked him, how many girls have you asked out? And he said, well, I've never asked anybody. I was like, well, that could be part of the issue. And so here's Boaz, this really nice guy. He just hasn't made a move. And we're reading the story and we're like, when is this going to happen? I mean, right from the beginning when he was introduced, we found out, well, he's related to the family. And then Naomi says, well, he's related to the family. Well, and nothing happens. And Ruth, I mean, she's amazing. She's going out there. She's working. She's, you know, she's doing her part. And Boaz, it's like, come on, Boaz. You're a nice guy and all, but make your move. Well, Naomi, the mother-in-law, the more experienced one, says, you know, I'll make sure to break this inertia. Something's going to happen. And it's going to happen in chapter 3. And I hope you're ready for it. Because here we go. Naomi, the mother-in-law, said to Ruth, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now, the word here used for security, if you're looking in the Hebrew and looking at how it's used in the Bible, it's usually related to what a woman should find in the home, in the house of a loving husband. That's why some translations will say, should I not find a home for you, a house for you? You know, there's a problem here. A provider, exactly. There's an issue here that Ruth is nice and all, but while she has no husband and no children and no family, if her mother-in-law passes away, then she loses all connection with God's people and any hope of having a family or, you know, a future or, you know, just some sort of security. And the mother-in-law is aware of this. And it's interesting, the words that she uses here, because it's very similar to the prayer that she says in chapter 1. If you just turn back, in my Bible, it's just one page. Chapter 1, verse 8. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go, return each to her mother's house, that the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with me. The Lord grant you that you find rest, each in the house of her husband. So the idea here is that Naomi remembers that prayer, and it's still what she wants for her daughters-in-law. And she says, maybe this is my role. Because so far we have seen Ruth working really hard to provide for herself and for her mother-in-law. Ruth has not been looking out for her own. She has been looking out for her mother-in-law. She's been working hard, providing for her mother-in-law. She's not going out there and looking for a husband. She's not going. No, she's taking care of her mother-in-law, which is why she came with her to begin with. Now her mother-in-law feels like, well, I need to do something for Ruth as well. And these two, like we mentioned in the very first sermon, they have this special relationship. I mean, this is the kind of relationship you want to have with someone. According to Block, Daniel Isaac Block, one of the commentators that I really liked on this book, he says, as in any healthy covenant relationship, these two, Ruth and Naomi, are people who have committed themselves to the other's good above their own. This is the relationship you want to find yourself in. That's why it's always nice to find someone who loves Jesus, because only someone with Jesus in their heart is going to be willing to put you above themselves. And when both parties behave in that way, that's the best relationship you can experience on earth. And if you can find that within your family, within your marriage, with a close friend, or, you know, just this is the goal. This is what you're shooting for. And here we have an example, not in a romantic setting, but between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, where they're dedicated to helping each other. What a joy to find someone who is that dedicated to the other person, and for you to be the other person, and to be dedicated to that someone. That is the secret to a healthy, happy relationship. So here we have Naomi, and she has to make a plan. She says, well, something needs to happen, something needs to change, and I have an idea. So as she's focusing on her daughter-in-law, she says, okay, let me lay down the facts. So let's read. Now Boaz, whose young woman you were with, is he not our relative? Notice how she says our. She could have said my relative. You know, he was a relative to my deceased husband. But she says, our relative. She's bringing Ruth in as one of the family. He's one of our relatives, isn't he? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. She's starting to make this plan. So she's giving Ruth just, you know, the facts right now. Okay, this guy is a relative. You've been there. You've seen him. You've been with the women that work for him. You've been there in his fields. Well, he's winnowing barley tonight. And this gives us sort of a timeline. This could have been, depending on how much grain they gathered, 1 to 2 weeks from where chapter 2 ended, where they were harvesting. So now they harvested, they cut it all, they brought it all to the threshing floors, and now they are going to be threshing the grain, winnowing the grain out there. Now the threshing floor, barley was usually threshed. What they would look for, the ideal situation, is you want to find a hill with a rock outcrop. Because if it's on the rock, the grain is not going to get mixed with dust. It's easier to sweep the grain afterwards. And why would he be doing this at night? Well, there's a cool breeze blowing. And if you're going to be out working hard, might as well have that cool breeze blowing through. Also, the breeze would help separate the chaff, the husks, from the grain. As they would, use a fork to throw it in the air, or I don't know what it's called, the thing with the holes in it. And the sift. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm glad that we have this interaction. So, they would be doing this at night out there. And they're working really hard. And what would happen is after they finish working, and it's late at night, they just sleep right there with the grain. Because the last thing you want is for a cow or a goat to wander in and eat up all your hard work. Also, you wouldn't want a thief to come by and help himself to after you've done all the harvesting and all the sifting and the threshing, and they just come in with a bag and take all your grain. So they work hard and probably sleep there as a way of guarding the grain as well. This would be similar also to shepherds would sleep with the sheep, outside. So this is known, and Ruth and Naomi is telling Ruth about all this, but she's not telling Ruth why. It's like, hey, isn't this happening? Isn't this true? And I can imagine Ruth there like, yes, where are you going with this? Well, here comes the plan. And just a heads up, this is, as we read through this, maybe you're going to have the same reaction that I had. It was like, this doesn't sound like a very good plan. But I'm going to let you be the judge. But let's go through this together. Because for me, anyway, we'll talk about it as we go there. Therefore, here's a few things I want you to do, Ruth. Naomi's talking to her, and she says, I want you to do what?
Wash
yourself. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean, Mom? Are you trying to tell me something? Like, yes, you need to go, and you need to wash yourself. Second, do what? Put on some perfume. It's hot out there. There's no deodorants. Put on some perfume. Wash yourself. Make yourself nice. And then put on your garment. Now, here's the thing. As I started looking into this, I never realized there's so much debate going on among scholars about the story of Ruth. Like this part, man, people have all kinds of different views on this. So in your Bible, if you pay attention, best is probably italicized, which means that this is us trying to understand what's going on here. The word there is just garment. But because in other places in the Bible, when people are getting ready for marriage, there's some of the same sequence. Bathe, anoint yourself, put on a nice garment. They think that this is what's happening here. But I think there's a good argument that this is not necessarily the case. Because the word used here, if you're going to follow every time it's used, it's not only used for best garment. It could be used just for a garment to go out that would cover you pretty much the whole body except for the head. Like you're getting ready to go outside. You might spend the night out. You need something warm to use as a blanket during the night. So we're not sure if it's best garment or just a special garment to be outside, to go on a journey, to spend the night where it might be colder. So put on the garment. And I'm going to go back and talk about this plan a little bit more because it's such an odd plan. But go there, put on the dress, go down to the threshing floor. But what? You have to be very sneaky. Don't let anybody see you. It's like, what's going on here? We're being introduced to like Ruth, the sweet-smelling ninja who's going to sneak around at dark. And you're like, what kind of plan is this? But don't let them see you. Until he has what? This woman's speaking from experience. If you're going to come to a man with a suggestion, let him eat, let him drink, and then talk to him.
Yes.
Don't talk to him when he's hungry. It's not going to go well. So she's saying, let him see you until he's done eating, until he's done drinking. And here's the thing, and scholars will look at this and they maybe overanalyze, because there was a situation with Lot, who is the original you know, the origin of the Moabites, where there was eating and there was drinking, and then his daughters came and things happened that shouldn't have happened. So in a way, people who are reading this are like, oh no, those Moabites, you know, Naomi got some bad ideas while she was out there. There's all these overtones where this story could go really bad. Like, here's this like nice, romantic, beautiful, and then if we just finish reading Judges, which comes just before the book of Ruth, we're already used to seeing some things that just makes us wonder, like, why is this even in the Bible? Like, this is so weird, and this is not, and you're like, oh no, this was such a good story, and it's going there, like, it's taking that weird turn of events. So we just get very uncomfortable as we're reading. What's Ruth up to? What kind of plan is Naomi planning? Like, is this a good idea? What's going to happen? In verse 4, she says, then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies. So go there, watch, find out where he's sleeping. And you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down. And then, well, then nothing. And then he'll tell you what to do. I would never give my daughter this advice. It's just a terrible idea. Like, you don't go to a guy at the middle of the night after he's been working hard all day, you know, he ate, he drank, he's happy, you know, he's laying down to sleep, and you uncover his legs and lay down. You might get the wrong idea. Like, you want to avoid that situation at all costs, not put yourself there. And it's so odd. Because, no, let's talk about some of the ways that this could go wrong. And I'm going to keep this PG. I mean, all the kids are gone. I guess I could go into more detail. No. So, like, no, please. My wife is like, no, don't say anything. So here's the thing. We had this story. Well, I guess we haven't talked about it here in the sermon, but there's the story of Jacob gets married, and then in the morning realizes the wrong girl. So the things that happen in the dark, kind of odd, you know. You don't want to Boaz to wake up groggy, you know, he's not thinking straight, and get the wrong idea here. I mean, or Boaz has been portrayed as such a noble character, this great guy. What if he says, Ruth, I'm really disappointed. I didn't think you were like this. Don't want to see you anymore. Like, there's this plan, there's so many different ways that it could go wrong. What if somebody else sees Ruth and Boaz and now both of their names are ruined in the community? What if somebody thinks she's a thief and attacks her? What if there's a whole bunch of what ifs going on here? And I was just getting anxious as I was reading this story because, and then the author goes on to say that it was common at the time for women to go to the men and approach them at night during this time, because this is the equivalent of a guy sleeping out there in the field, away from the home, next to a pile of money. If you want to get away with something, this was the opportunity to do it. So there's all these dangers, and even culturally, there's all these red flags, there's all this way that something could go wrong. But Naomi seems to trust so much that Boaz will do the right thing, that she leaves the rest up to him. He has demonstrated himself to be such a Christian, I wouldn't say Christian because Jesus hasn't come yet, such a God-fearing man, that she says he will do the right thing. And as a man, I'm thinking, well, I don't know. You know, he's waking up groggy, it's dark. You know, I'm just scared. And I was like, do I have to keep reading? What's going to happen in the story next? And she goes up there and she does everything that her mother-in-law tells her to do. And this plan seems like a hopeless gamble. We have to trust that Boaz will understand the right way, will interpret correctly all these different, you know, unspoken cues that are taking place. And there is plenty of room here for things to be misunderstood, taken the wrong way, for him to be offended, for the relationship to be ruined, for things to be misunderstood, for Ruth to be, you know, interpreted in the wrong way. But Ruth goes, and she's moving forward with the plan. Now listen to what the Bible says. And she said to her, verse 5, I will do all that you say for me to do. And it's like, no, Ruth, please argue with her. Like, talk over this plan. But she goes forward, verse 6. And she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. After Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful. You know, he had a good day. He had a good day of work. He had good results for his efforts. Now he ate and he's like going to sleep after a good. This is the best sleep that you get. He went to lie down at the end of what? The heap of grain. And so she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. And I imagine that she was just waiting. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And she's waiting. And she's waiting. And she's waiting. And it turns out Boaz was really tired, and he's not waking up. She's still there waiting. Boaz is not waking up. If it was me, if I'm sleeping and you uncover my feet, I'm waking up. But if there's one thing that I need covered for me to sleep, it's my feet. So Boaz doesn't wake up. And the Bible says it's not until midnight. I imagine this is when the air starts to get cooler. Then it's like, why are my legs cold? And he wakes up and there's a person there lying on my legs. How did this happen? Where am I? You know when you wake up and you're kind of lost? Like, why did I? Well, usually when I go camping, I wake up like, why am I in a tent? And I forget like what happened. Like, oh yes, we're camping. So he wakes up and there's a woman by his feet. And this is that moment of truth. How is Boaz going to react to a woman sneaking up to him in the middle of the night and uncovering his legs? Awkward situation. And here we have these people that we've been admiring, we've been falling in love with them, and they're so great, and we take them to be this awesome example, and now they're in this awkward situation, and we can barely read what's going to happen next. And it says, verse 8, and it happened now at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there, a woman lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? Which makes perfect sense. And she answered and said what? I'm Ruth, your servant. Now the idea was for Ruth to stop talking at that point and let him tell her what to do. But Ruth says, I changed the plan. You know, I'm just going to ad lib here. I'm going to do something here on my own. She tells Boaz what to do. Instead of being quiet and waiting like her mother-in-law told her, she's like, no, I got this. Marry me. What? You had one job, Ruth. You're doing so well. I mean, you bathe, you got the perfume, you were sneaky, you find out where he was sleeping, you did everything right. And now she proposes to him. And let me just tell you on how many levels this is odd. We have a woman proposing to a man. Something that to this day is still uncommon. It probably happens more often, but it's still uncommon. Imagine back then. We have a woman proposing to a man. We have a younger person proposing to an older person. We have a field worker proposing to the field owner. We have a foreigner proposing to the native. In many different ways, Ruth should have been quiet. You know, this is not what you do. But she had gotten to know the man. And maybe Boaz is such a nice guy that unless she took that step, it's one way of interpreting it. But, you know, people wrestle with this. This is a weird story. It's a weird turn, especially in this story, because these characters have been described up to this point as being so faithful, so wonderful, so loving, so pure, so righteous. That, you know, it's what I like as far as the argument goes. I don't see any sexual innuendo in any of this because it would be so against the way that the characters have been portrayed up to this point. Do you see what I'm saying? The narrator has been very careful to portray these two people as noble, God-loving people. And it wouldn't make sense for the way that Boaz is going to react here in a little bit if he had gotten the idea that Ruth is trying anything shady in this aspect. So, but let me talk about this a little bit more before we move on. Another way of looking at Ruth putting on the garment is that it's time for her to stop wearing the clothes of a widow, the clothes of someone who is mourning, which would make sense to why Boaz hasn't made a move. He could be respecting her. He says, look, I'm going to wait until she's emotionally ready to think about moving on. She has lost a loved one. She's grieving. I'm not going to rush anything. I'm not going to push anything. So in a way, her mother-in-law is saying, you know, anoint yourself, you know, take a bath, put on this garment. It could be, okay, time to take off the clothes that you wear for mourning and make a sign that you're a widow and put on regular clothes saying, I'm ready for life. I'm open to being in a relationship, to moving on. And maybe there in the dark, she had to make this clear, you know, verbally. And look at the words that she uses. And I know it's translated a little bit differently in different versions. But she says to him, what? I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing. Or there's some verse says, you know, spread your skirt over. It's different ways of translating. There's just all these awkward phrases, expressions in Ruth. But I like the expression, take your maidservant under your wing, because this reflects back to what we talked about last week on chapter 2, verse 12, where he says that she has found refuge under the wings of God. She has come for protection under the wings of God, and she says, hey, would you mind spreading your wings over me? Would you be willing to be God's blessing in my life? Can you imagine a marriage with that in mind? For a husband to see his role as an extension of God's blessing towards his wife? So many marriages struggle because the man fails to recognize his role to protect, to provide, to be an extension of God's blessing. There are so many people who suffer in their marriage because their man, their husband, never understood from God how he was to behave. But if we can learn this now, that my role is to extend a blessing from God towards my spouse. Man, the beauty that's found in this story. As she's asking for this, you know, please extend your wings to cover me. For you are a close relative or a goel, a kinsman redeemer, a word that we've been sort of skirting around because I didn't want to spoil it. He is the one that can raise up the family name and continue the tradition. And this is very important. According to the law of Moses, people were supposed to keep their inheritance, they're supposed to keep their land, they're supposed to keep their family name. You're not supposed to lose that. That's why there was the year of Jubilee. It's like a reset button. All the debts are forgiven. All the land is given back. Everything is back to the beginning. Because every family should have enough to provide for themselves. The name should not die out. So what Ruth here is saying is, this is not just for me. This is also for my mother-in-law. This is to keep our name going. Ruth is talking to him as if she was an Israelite, as if she's familiar with all the rules. And I guess the two of them, her and her mother-in-law, have talked about this. No, this is the right thing to do according to the law of Moses. Another way of saying this is God's plan. Are you willing to redeem my family, the family of my father-in-law who passed away? Can we do this? It's God's will. It's God's plan. Are you willing to do this? And there's a blessing in there for Ruth, but it's not focusing on Ruth. It's focusing, as she says here, my goel. This is focusing on the family, on the will of God. And notice what happens. Verse 10, Boaz says what? Blessed. There is a blessing in there. There's always blessings in. People are always blessing each other, especially Boaz. Every time he opens his mouth, he's blessing someone. Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter. The same endearing term that her mother-in-law used. Not your foreigner, you widow, you know, this person who doesn't have anything talking to me, a landowner, a man of, you know, influence in this town. No, he says, hey, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness. Guess what the Hebrew word is? Chesed, what we've been talking about. This faithful kindness that goes with the covenant. You have been faithful. You've shown kindness at the end more than at the beginning. Like, wait a minute. How does showing up in the middle of the night, uncovering his legs, how is that a sign of kindness? Like, doesn't make any sense. But as he explains the story, it begins to make sense. Ruth did not come back and then start looking around for a husband. Going to the place where the single men are, where the young men are, or going after rich. She came and she started working to provide for her mother-in-law. And when it came time for her to find somebody, to look for somebody, she looked for somebody to redeem the name of the family. Which means Ruth was concerned with doing the right thing by God, by the law, as opposed to just looking for someone for herself. And he says, let me go back here and read. For you did not go after young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, do not fear. And what does he say next? Whoa. Ruth was the one who was supposed to wait for him to tell her what to do. And the way the story ends, the story is progressing, Boaz is telling Ruth, I'm going to do everything you want. And he's serving her. How does that happen? So this man is willing to take this woman who's a foreigner from Moab, this widow who has nothing to her name, no claim to anything. And he raises her to the level of an equal. And he says, you know what? I'm going to do what you want me to do. I'm going to serve you. And he takes a very confident man, very strong man, a godly man, to be willing to serve someone who, by all other standards, is lower than him. And says, you know what? I see you as a child of God. I see you as somebody who is faithful to your mother-in-law. You are hardworking. You're very loving. You're living out this chesed. And you're right. And I'm going to honor that. And here's the fascinating thing. He says, and now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do what you request. For, and here's the reason, all the people of my town, and this in the Hebrew here is a reference to the people who gather at the gates. The gates is where politics are discussed. This is where policies are made. This is where official business takes place at the gates of the city. That's why you're going to read about Abraham sitting at the gate or Lot. This is where business takes place. And he's saying everybody at the gate, the leaders, the policymakers, the decision makers, they recognize you as a what? A noble woman, a virtuous woman. You know what's really interesting with this expression? It's the same one that we find there in, I put my notes here. It's the same one that we find in the book of Proverbs. Yes, Proverbs 31 and also Proverbs 12 verse 4, where there's a description of the virtuous woman. He's saying, you are a virtuous woman that the Bible describes as the greatest blessing, the greatest wealth a man can find on this earth outside of God. It's a virtuous woman. And he says, you are a virtuous woman. I'm going to do what you asked. I'm going to do according to your plan because you are a virtuous woman. Now, not only that, this is the same phrase now in the female version that was used in chapter 2, verse 1 when Boaz was first introduced. Remember that phrase that we're not sure if it means he's a mighty warrior or a man of power or a man of character? The same phrase he uses for Ruth. That means Boaz is now speaking to her using the same description that was used for him. You are like me. You're not lower. You're not less. You're like me. A virtuous woman. Because he was recognized as a virtuous man. A man of power. A man of influence. A man of character. And he's saying, you are, and he uses the same Hebrew word. You are like me. Now it is true that I am a close relative. However, I knew it. The story was going too well. we're about to have, that moment where they just close up and maybe there'll be a kiss or something, right? And it's like, oh, the love is, it's perfect. It is, but there's a problem. It's true. I am a Goel. I am a kinsman. I am a redeemer. But there's someone closer than I. The story. It's killing me. Boaz wants to do the right thing. He could have said, hey, yes, I got the girl, after all these years. And you can tell that he's been watching her, he's been admiring her, he just wasn't making a move. And we want them to get together, but there's an obstacle. I'm not the closest one. Now here's the plan. Spend the night. In the morning, though, you have to go before anybody sees you because, you know, make things weird. Remember, that plan is still weird. It didn't solve the, you know, but God in His mercy has blessed even this weird plan that everything worked out. And I think even in this, we see the invisible hand of God guiding. For Boaz to wake up groggy in the middle of the night and have the right interpretation of the events. For Ruth to have the wisdom to speak out when she did, even though that was not part of the plan, but to say just the right words, use just the right illustration to touch Boaz's heart, and for Boaz to understand her intentions as being an expansion of chesed and not a selfish or a wrong approach to this relationship. And he says, okay, hang out, and then in the morning, you have to go before people wake up, before anybody sees you. And if the other guy doesn't want to perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it. If he wants to, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty of the man for you, I will perform the duty for you. For as the Lord lives, lie down until morning. This is the end of verse 13. And as the Lord lives, it's another way of saying, you know, by the life of God. You know, it's sort of saying, I will do this. This is a promise. So she lay down at his feet until morning, and she rose before one could recognize another. And he said, do not let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. You know, this could look bad for you. And also he said, bring a shawl and that is on you and hold it. And she held it, and he measured 6 measurements of barley. We're not sure if it was ephahs. If it was ephah, it would be like 100 pounds. It's way too much. We're not sure what the measurement was. It says measurements. Anyway, there's a whole discussion on that. If you want, I can get into it later, one-on-one. So she took it, and she went into the city. Then she came to her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law is super excited. Probably nobody slept that night. And after that, I can imagine she sat there by his feet just thinking like, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? I'm going to be married. You know, he's such a nice guy. And she's thinking about all this. And he's there thinking, okay, I'm going to go and meet the guy. Where am I going to find him? And I'm going to have to bring this and talk to this person and call. So nobody's sleeping that night. Meanwhile, Naomi's there at home just, you know, just wondering like, I wonder what's going on. I wonder what Boaz did. I wonder what Ruth is. So nobody's sleeping. And Ruth comes home and it's like at the crack of dawn. And her mother's like, yes, who's there? Tell me what happened. And she told her that the men had done for her. And she said, these 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, do not go empty-handed where? He knows. This is about the family. This is about Ruth being faithful to her mother-in-law. She could have abandoned her mother-in-law at any point, gone and got married, and just done whatever she wanted. It's all connected. Ruth is doing what's right for her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law guided her through this because it's what's best for Ruth. And Boaz is doing what's right for Ruth. He gets a blessing. The mother-in-law gets... Everybody comes out winning when we follow the plan of God. Unlikely as it seemed for Ruth to trust in her mother-in-law and her God to follow her and to just embark in this journey, not knowing how it was going to lead. Odd as that plan was, and coincidences as have been happening all over the place, the only explanation is God has been guiding in this. And if people would just let God guide and not rebel against His will, things will turn out in such beautiful ways, unexpected ways, as we see here in the story. And finally, we end the story on another cliffhanger. Because she says what to her daughter? Wait. Sit still. Wait. No, not wait. I'm tired of waiting. Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. Or how the things will fall. It's the literal Hebrew. You know, it's sort of like that luck thing again. Oh, who knows? No, God is guiding in this. Just trust. And it's so hard to trust. But if we can learn to follow God, do our part, and leave what's beyond our control in His hands. Can we do that? She did. She made the plan. She put the plan together. She acted on the plan. Now the rest is beyond her control. Sit still. Some of us could be at that point in our lives right now. We've done everything that we could do. Now we're sitting still. We raised our children. We brought them to church. We brought them to Christian education. And now they're making their choices. And we're limited in what we can do. Some of us have just now come into church and we're finding out about God and learning all these things, and now we're trying to do what we can, and there's things that are beyond our control. Sit still. Wait. Trust. If there's one thing that we can learn from the book of Ruth, and there's many things, but one of the main ones is God has got a hold on things. He's not sitting back idly. He's not powerless. He's working. It's just he's doing it his way. And it doesn't always match with our way. But if we can learn to be loving, let's raise each other to a level of equals where we can respect each other, love each other, provide for each other. And, you know, just if we can have that and say, just Lord, now you take the rest and bless and provide and work out your miracles. There's a lot of exciting, good things headed our way, headed your way, when you choose to be loving, when you choose to be faithful, and you learn to sit still and wait, and just let God do what God does best, which is to bless. Amen. And He loves to bless, and it is my prayer that He blesses all of you. Amen.
Amen.